Welcome to the Tiny Plastic People podcast, the podcast about tiny plastic people. We paint them, we play with them, sometimes we put them on display, and we want to tell you why we think that's great. This is episode dozen, or 12 in English. Today I'm joined by Rich.
Hello.
Hello, Rich. I'm also joined by Tom.
Hello. Tom Field. That one. There's a lot of us.
Yeah, I'm not going to introduce myself like that. Maybe I will. Introduce also Rachel.
Hello.
Hello. And also Tom. Hello, it's me. But I'll go by Dines, because that'll be easier. How is everybody? Are you well?
Yeah, good.
Very well, thank you.
Good. That's good. Did you have a nice Christmas and New Year?
Very pleasant. It was, yeah.
Yeah. It certainly happened.
It feels the last like
a
one. Distant
memory. That was a Christmas, wasn't it?
Yeah. It certainly was a period at the end of December. How's that been hobby wise? What have Rich? What have you been up to in this festive period and since?
What have I been up to? This question catches me off guard every time I get asked it.
It was in the pod notes. You should have been prepared.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry,
I can't believe you've done this.
It was your life for the last month. Should have been prepared on that terms.
Yeah, just what has happened? I guess on the festive pod, I said that I was working on some Maggotkin of Nurgle. That is, it's not all finished, but I have like a 2,000 point army finished and just a few bits left to finish off. Someone in my local Games Workshop, Secret Santa that they do every year, incredibly generously bought me a Glockkin, the Glockkin.
Wow. Yes.
So that's coming off on my hobby table soon. But I want to finish the other few bits I've got first, and that can be, I think, like the capstone on the project. And then I can play some games with them, hopefully.
Has there been any like theme to that? I didn't know that. Gotta be honest, I didn't know you had a big Nurgle army. What's the, like? I genuinely didn't.
It was such a secret.
Yeah. To be fair, I just sort of dropped just before Christmas a load of pictures in our Discord server. Like, here's what I've been working on in secret.
Absolutely maddening.
Yeah, Rachel felt very betrayed, I think.
Incredible effort.
There's not a theme to them as such, other than kind of generic Nurgly theme. Like, they're not, there's not a concept as such, but
they're all sickos.
Yeah, they're all just disgusting. Disgusting bastards. I've tried to use contrast as much as possible. I've done a lot of like underpainting with contrast and tried to get them, although they're horrible and green and gross, I tried to keep them quite bright technical paints and glazing of contrast and things, and then sort of focused highlights rather than perfectly edge highlighting every single mini. So
nice.
Yeah, that's a lot. I painted some Space Marines, one Black Templar, and a handful of Tome Keepers. Space Marines are Space Marines. It's not a lot exciting to say. That does get me to 1,000 points of Tome Keepers finished, which feels like a nice milestone.
Nice.
Did you manage to get a game with them?
I did. I think I played a couple of games with them, yeah, but I played two 1,000-point games with them in one day last week. And frankly, I'm still recovering from it. But yeah, I feel like I'm just getting to the point now that I'm playing 40k more regularly with some local friends that I understand it more, and that's giving me more headspace to enjoy it rather than be mad about it the whole time, because it's confusing me. So yeah, they're good.
That's cool.
I lost both of those games, as is tradition. Both because it had newly painted models in it and because it was being piloted by me. Overlapping tradition means they didn't have a chance. And then...
Nice.
Other than that, I mentioned, I think, very briefly that some Trogs might be on the horizon. And I'm going to hold it up to the camera. This is great radio. I've literally just finished
Oh, wow.
The first Trog.
What a beautiful model.
Is that the secret Santa Trog?
Listener,
yes.
Yeah, listener, imagine a really nicely painted Trog, and you'll get it.
This is my...
Okay, nearly there.
I got my £20 webcam, could convey that it's really nice. Thank you. This was my Secret Santa gift, in fact, from fellow Tiny Plastic People person James did this. So.
Oh, I knew it.
You ruined the secret.
Yes.
I've ruined it. I'm sorry.
That was the only one that any of us guessed from the sound of things.
I knew it.
Well, yeah, you all knew it already, so I haven't ruined everything. Sorry, listener, if you cared deeply about the sanctity of our Secret Santa, but James can't go unrecognised for an incredible conversion that I've had, an absolute blast painting. So, yeah, excited to maybe paint some more Trogs soon as well.
I have a question about the Tome Keepers.
Oh, go ahead.
How many tomes can 1,000 points of Tome Keepers keep?
You should
know this.
That is quite a question. Yeah, I mean, what kind of general am I if I don't even know a simple logistics answer?
Do you even know where your tomes are?
it's 8 o'clock. Do you know where your tomes are?
Getting to see why you lost your games. So.
Fuck. Every Marine must have one tome that's like the relic of their exploits. They probably wouldn't describe
what about
them as
scouts?
Exploits. Yeah, I guess like it's the culture of the planet that they've declared their home planet, and Rachel is now face palming as she gets an actual Space Marine lore answer to the
I was scratching, I wasn't face palming.
Do the scouts just bring like their favourite childhood book?
I don't know. I don't know when you're allowed to write in the book. I'm not sure that's been covered in lore. But yeah, there's like the culture is based around everyone dies really quickly because the world is radioactive, other than the Space Marines, obviously. So historically, everyone wrote everything down. So when you grew up,
they didn't write down "stay away from radiation." Though,
yeah,
they?
Well, I think the whole planet is radioactive.
Lost track of how to leave the planet.
Yeah, when they grow up, or as they're growing up, the people have like a 30-year lifespan or something. So the idea is that you don't spend any of that valuable time that you're alive learning how to do things. You just do what's written in the books already by the people that came before you. So you don't have to learn to fish because the book just tells you how to fish. Now, this is how the real world works, and it's not how human existence works.
So you give the books to the big men who don't die, and then they take the books into space, and now you don't know how to fish.
Shit.
Yeah, I think...
Teach a man to fish, and he'll fish forever, but give the book on fishing to a spaceman, and he'll die of radiation.
And he will extinguish the perfidious Xenos fish, thus saving the planet, or something like that.
The Imperium is so good and like logical.
Presumably the Space Marines are not like as affected by the non-stop radiation.
No.
So they get to live a bit longer.
So there's an exciting lore hook of the juxtaposition between people whose culture is based around the fact that they die really quickly, and some of those people being elevated to Space Marinedom and then not dying, other than by being shot in the face by an Eldar or whatever. So there's like some themes of jealousy and injustice.
Do the Space Marines feel guilty?
I don't think the Space Marines themselves care, but the humans are sad. I'm not sure. There's supposed to be some Tome Keepers like narrative coming out in either the White Dwarf that's just come out as we record, or the next one, I think, and supposedly a part of a longer story. So it's quite exciting to see some narrative there that's more than a paragraph in a little index. So
in this story, someone's lost the book about how to, I don't know, bake bread.
Yeah, I mean, it does
like,
seem...
How am I going to get my toast now?
Guess we'll bake skulls.
It does seem like a system that's open to failure. But
that's not like the Imperium, Rich, so I, you know...
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
Anyway, that's pretty good. Rach, what have you been up to?
I have been making little hills out of XPS foam. And I have reached the stage where, so these are like, they're basically just a bit of XPS foam, like maybe like an inch thick, and I've cut it into a sort of vaguely organic shape, and then stuck it on a base that's slightly larger than it is, and then that's pretty much it, barring some modelling compound around the base.
I would ask why.
Well, because in the game of Warhammer, you can put your little guys on top of the hill, and then they can see further.
Stunned silence.
Yeah.
From a podcast full of people.
I don't believe it personally.
Never considered using Battlefield tactics in their lives.
Clearly, I'm only the only Master General in this chat.
So it would seem.
I think rules is written. You can just stand on the hill and gain a cover bonus, right? That used to be the case.
I don't know. Anyway,
what's so a like, cover? What's a cover bonus? We're talking about fucking Agincourt here.
I made some similar hills last year or the year before, but like I have a problem with them, which is that like their slopes are steeper, not steeper. They're like they have longer slopes, and that makes playing with them a bit awkward because you're like you want to put a guy at the bottom of it so you can attack the guy on top, but it's slightly further than an inch, but you can't like put him halfway up the slope because he'll fall over. So these ones are cleverly designed such that you can either stand at the bottom of the little sort of steep cliff slope or yeah, it's much more playable, so I'm quite pleased with them. And I'm at the stage now where I've like painted them and it's time to put some like flock on them, and I just put some PVA on this one that's right in front of me the now, so that I could start flocking it, and then it was time to record the podcast. So I'm just watching the PVA dry in slow motion.
Now you've just got a shiny nice. A shiny hill.
Yep. Because I
they look like sort of like mini maces.
Yeah.
Like
that's the idea. Nice flat topped. Very playable.
Yeah, they're sort of like rocks, aren't they? Rocky.
Yeah, I could probably just like
outcrops is the wrong.
I could probably not outcrops. Put any flock on them, and they'd look fine. They just kind of look like nice rocks.
What's the base made of?
It is some kind of foam board. It's reasonably sturdy, but not too thick and heavy. So, yeah. Anyway, nice. Apart from that, I was painting my Warhammer Fortress, which is like a really old out of production kit.
Oh yes. I'm very jealous of that.
Dines, I can see how jealous you are. You're staring directly at the webcam. It's slightly uncomfortable.
Deeply, deeply. Anybody who's ever listened to me talking knows that I will only ever talk about terrain, so I'm deeply envious.
Anyway, so like that was just like spray it very dark grey and then loads of dry brushing, and that's about it. Very fun, satisfying. It's been sitting on my like to-do list for ages and ages though, so it's nice to get it finally complete.
I have one question about that. So the towers in the corners, right, they have little doors, don't they?
They do, yes.
Yeah. Are the doors on sides which are like at 90 degrees to each other, or are they opposite?
It depends on the tower. So there's five towers, and four of the towers have doors on like adjacent sides of the building. And one of the towers has doors on opposite side to the building, so it can go like in the middle of a wall.
I'm thinking
section.
About I'm thinking of like a long section, because the thing itself is quite is a little bit unwieldy, right? It's not actually that big, so it'd be nice as like the maybe splitting the board in half or like lining along one side or something like that.
Yeah, my plan is to build some like stairs out of foam to like make it so that the towers can kind of stand on their own or at the end of a section of wall without like there being a door that opens onto thin air, which looks a bit silly.
Confusing.
Yeah. And then before that, I was painting some Lord of the Rings elves and the Battle of Balin's Tomb.
Oh, yes, those old Fellowship models.
It's a board lovely game. Yeah, it's got a bunch of goblins and a troll and the Fellowship of the Ring. So it was nice to. I've wanted to paint those models for ages and ages, and cool to do.
Are you going to expand that into the next scene with the
the Balrog.
That would be pretty neat.
Of Morgoth.
Yeah.
It's a great model.
Have they done the... they were going to do a made-for-order run of some classic scenes, including the Khazad Dûm Gandalf and Balrog. Mm. Have they done that, really? Or is that still in the future?
I don't know, actually.
Because that would be...
I don't recall seeing it, but then again, don't pay too much attention to it.
Presumably a metal one rather than the modern plastic, but...
I remember that.
That old metal Balrog.
I remember the old metal Balrog. Because I think a friend had it, and it's just like, it's so much metal.
Beefy thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Oh, that's pretty cool. And Tom, how about you? What have you been up to?
Well... Before that, why don't we talk about what you've been up to?
Well, really, the answer is because it's not that very much, to be honest. I haven't done painting in a long time. I had a big lull over Xmas. I enjoyed listening to the pods, hearing about other people's hobby. But my own has been vicarious enjoyment of the hobby, I think is the right word.
Yeah.
And then looking at Eldar. And looking at all my unfinished stuff and going, I should do something about that. I should get rid of that. I'm never going to finish that. But I'll talk about that a bit later. Nice. But generally, not an awful lot, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, right.
But that's fine. That just happens, right?
Well, it's good to know you're in a lull sometimes.
Yeah.
Don't necessarily have to do anything about it, as long as you're
happy. I think I'm ramping up to something, so...
You're looking to the future and liking what you see.
Entire village of fortified manors.
My goodness, that is actually my next year. I mean, I wasn't on any Christmas pods, but good grief, that's got to be a goal this year. Get some of that freaking terrain done.
Yeah,
there was so much of it, and I need to. I think any of it's done. There's so much. There's so much. But we'll see. I threatened to have a sort of a terrain painting party at some point. Oh. And just sort of trying to rope people in. Like, please, oh, let's have a fun day where you paint my terrain for me.
Your
please.
Terrain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. Keep your own terrain at home. Come paint my stuff.
You don't get
please.
To take anything home at the end.
No, you don't get to take anything home. I'll furnish you with pizza, but that's about as far as I'll go.
That is not furnishing. I
mean, that does sound pretty good, to be fair.
Well, see, that's the lure. But we'll see.
Yeah, I'd go for that.
Yeah. Oh, well. But Tom, what have you been up to?
So this month, since Christmas, I painted a couple of Seraphon. Got fed up with them. Going to paint something else. I have since discovered Necromunda, the local group near to where I am, is going to be running a Necromunda campaign soon. And that seems like such a lovely idea. I thought it was time to paint the reasonably large amount of Orlocks I've had on sprue under my bed for like 15 months. So, yeah.
Is that more than one gang, like basic gang box? Then?
I have got the basic gang box and the... advanced one with the Wreckers and the Arms Master, and the Forgebolt resin and some weapons and some Gorzag and Nikit, the Orc and Goblin characters that came out last Christmas, and I have converted them into an ammo merchant and a bounty hunter.
That's awesome.
Apparently I did that without particularly considering the rules, and apparently the ammo merchant's deal is that he makes all special ammunition reasonably easy to come by, which is just so fantastic for a grot that you can like go to the shops and there's a goblin there and he pulls out a bullet that will make the person hit with it go insane and develop psychic powers. I'm very happy with that.
Well, the one guy in the hive, in your section of the hive, who's got plasma gun coils or whatever, is this little green guy who lives under his desk.
Yes.
Or whatever.
running around with a big sack with a dollar sign on it, and he pulls out, like, a melter gun canister or something.
Yeah, a space marine melter gun canister. What the hell did you get that?
Yeah, nice. So I got to play my first couple of games of Necromunda the past week, and it's good. It's fun. I like it. One thing I've noticed is that it's just absolutely irresistible to make a narrative out of it, right? The rules seem really well set up that you can... you say, okay, I'm shooting you and now you're pinned and such, and you can see the story of that unfold.
So is the narrative just falling out of the rules as you're playing the game then?
I think it makes it very straightforward for that progression to happen, right? Like, the basic mechanics are not intrinsically narrative themselves, maybe, but I think it's... I think they lend themselves very well to being interpreted in that way. So, for example, we had... oh, this is great. We had... Juve runs up to a door and opens it, and that's the end of his turn. The lady on the other side with a combat shotgun shoots him twice in the face, deals no wounds, and then has to close the door herself in her own turn to not get shot back. That was a reasonably dry mechanical way of describing it, right? And and you can see that in your mind's eye very clearly as a, like, the door shooms open and then shooms closed again. I think I like that a lot. I'm very glad to be able to do a narrative campaign for that.
And you can definitely picture things something like that happening in, like, a sort of slapstick Jackie Chan movie or something. John Woo or something.
Oh, is it too late to have a Jackie Chan character in my Orlogs?
Well, there's always opportunity to add more, right? Someone's going to die eventually.
Yeah.
You could give somebody a power fist, but it's just the really good normal hand. They're really good at punching with just one inch punch, everybody. Just like a big wind up and everything, but bam.
The,
like,
Orlocks have got a character. They've got a special thing for that, right? They've got one of their special skills is the ability to replace all of your melee attacks with just one really hard hit, so maybe that's what I should set up for that character.
Yeah, lean into that.
Yeah,
make a martial arts character. That'd be cool. So is that a narrative campaign that's ongoing in your local area?
Yes, starting early next month. So I'm currently I don't have my camera on, so won't show it to you and not the audience at home. But I'm currently looking at a test Orlok who is right now he's at the stage where some bits of him have been painted so much that they're losing a little bit of definition, since I'm having trouble settling on something. But I think I might just go for a classic kind of scene. I think there's two other Orlok players and they're both doing something special and fancy, so I might settle into being the normal one.
This is always the thing that makes me raise my eyebrow whenever I see, like, Necromunda campaigns happening, is that everyone loves Orloks and Eshers. I think, like, they're two coolest aesthetics, in my opinion. Like, the cool biker gang, you can see why that appeals, because, you know, it's a classic thing. And then Eshers are, like, the opportunity for colour and female sculpts, or, like, significant numbers of female sculpts, at least.
They're the punk rock ones. So
yeah, exactly.
Nobody chooses the guys from The Matrix, or the big boys, or...
the sci-fi guys.
Yeah.
I would have gone with the guys from The Matrix if they were more like their old models, because the old models are very guy from The Matrix, and the new ones are they're very cool. They're very spindly and skylized, but they're not quite Matrix enough. So I went for the bikers instead.
The new ones don't look like the Matrix ones were like, I'm wearing a trench coat because I'm fucking hench and I'm going to, like, throw it off dramatically and beat the shit out of you. Whereas the new guy's like, I'm wearing a trench coat because if I don't, my skin will burn and I will evaporate. So this is a different vibe.
Classic Warhammer escalation.
Yeah.
Does every Necromunda gang have like a movie or band that it's like?
Vanstar is Avatar, isn't it? Right, because they can plug in their hair.
Vanstar's Avatar. They can plug in their hair. You've got like you say, Dilaka the Matrix.
What's that film about? Roller Derby.
Bring it on.
Maybe.
No.
Wicket.
Hold on. It was
Wicket. Wicket is Astro, right?
Yeah. They do lend themselves very well to roller derby style names. The Eshers.
Yeah. Contributor Axo has some incredibly named Escher gangers from what?
Oh yes, shit. What was it?
He's very, very good at coming up with names for names
Booster Vax or something.
The
Enforcers. The Enforcers would be Judge Dredd, right?
Yeah.
They're pure Dredd.
Yeah. Goliath's sort of like the Warriors or something, I guess. Like,
are they not Mad Max?
Or Mad Max?
No.
Yeah. They're
like. Arnie films, right?
They're sort of a mix.
Conan, maybe.
Yeah.
Conan. It's like a techno Conan. And what else? Well, okay,
Orlok's any
biker thing.
Biker/rock gang based film.
School of Rock.
They're not a gang, they're a band. Or a class.
Sorry. if they're a video game, they'd be Brutal Legend, right?
But
And Cordar Midsummer.
Yeah, there we go.
Midsummer, however you say it.
Yeah. Weird. Weird cult.
Oh, yeah.
The Maypole is on fire.
I hope this conversation has given the audience lots of painting colour scheme ideas. Just remember to credit us.
Oh, my God. Cordar Flower Crowns.
Yeah. Oh.
Do you think there's a company that will 3D print me some tiny flower crowns?
There is a person who will, and it's me.
What about Redemptionists?
Oh, they're
Midsummer,
they're
but on fire.
Yeah.
Or
the Wicker Man.
Wicker Man. Yeah. Not the bees.
Yeah, okay, that's it.
That's
it. They've completed Necromunda.
Yeah, Necromunda is the thing.
Finished the whole game.
It's the thing that I have sort of studiously resisted. I've played a couple of games, but I've sort of resisted getting drawn into it. But that conversation has just made me think Bioshock Water Guild. And now...
Oh, yes.
Now I want to paint the big water ogryn.
Ooh.
So...
I bet you could ask Rouge about like places to get... Little sister esque cultist vague models that you could sub in for other stuff for sure.
He's definitely glued at least one auto gun onto some kind of
small child
model. Yeah, I think he did
small
Hobbits,
child model,
right?
Yeah, sorry,
I did. One of the Lord of the Rings models of Eowyn has her in like the Helm's Deep outfit when she was just wearing like a dress rather than running around with a sword and helmet and such, and I used that as a creepy little psychic girl for my Inquisition warband back in the day.
The scale
worked out pretty well for that. Gave her like a fairly ringish colour scheme and swapped her sword for something.
There's the old Bretonian damsel. There's two of those. There's a hourglass figure is probably the wrong way of phrasing one of them. The other one is wearing a cool cloak with like a cool staff. There's another sort of generic weird looking lady.
There's options out there
looking for such models.
Oh, yes.
The other one is sort of like infinity symbol shaped in sort of weird proportions, so probably that's a different style.
I'm looking at the damsel now. I'm a big fan of the mounted damsel, who is in the classic citadel mounted pose, where she is holding both of her arms up into the air, like she's doing the YMCA on horseback.
Yeah,
that's how you cast a spell. I had several
different old Warhammer wizards in that pose, and elves, actually. I think old Teclis, mounted Teclis, comes in that pose.
He really is.
There's certainly at least one high elf mage who's doing that.
I mean,
he's got a sword in one hand, stuff.
Current day Teclis is.
She's also doing that.
That's a very good point.
All praising the sun.
Yeah. Anyway, Tom, sorry, we've really dragged away from your initial topic. How are you going to prepare for this Necromunda campaign?
I'm going to have to learn what the campaign rules are. Everybody else is in the group chat discussing how much money they are leaving over at the end of gang creation for if somebody dies in the first game, and I don't know if I want to do that.
It depends, right?
I think
it's going to depend on how, like, because it happened to me in Kill Team where, like, we decided to play a narrative, and then my leader died in the first game, and it leaves you no recourse, and it means that the next few games will be sort of like a little bit miserable. I feel like if you need some padding, right? So if you accidentally screw yourself out and screw yourself into having a, like, I don't know, pretty one-sided,
yeah. You get your leader killed and you're 250
and
points
no way
down.
Of countering them.
Is there no
first game? Be a bit sad.
Is there no insurance mechanic?
There is. So I'm. I mean,
yeah, I guess so.
What,
like,
health insurance?
You want a bit of a payout when one of these guys dies? Right?
Yeah. I'm going off memory here, so somebody who actually knows about Necromunda listening to this podcast will be screaming into their fist right now. But I think you can pay the doctor to make them better, basically, which means that you need a bit of money left, because that's something like 2d6 times 10 credits. So you want to leave a little bit of money left over, so even if someone gets killed and then rolls the actually dead result on the are they dead or not table, you want that money so you can bring them back. And I am seriously considering just having another guy rather than doing that.
That probably works.
The last game I played, I read a tactics article that said that smoke grenades were very good. So I took a smoke grenade and I threw it at my own guys to keep them in cover, and immediately ran out of smoke grenades. And then that one smoke grenade stayed there for the rest of the game, and I got charged while I was in the smoke, which meant that they couldn't attack me and I couldn't attack them, and I couldn't pass the initiative test to leave. So I had half of my gang blundering around in a big cloud of smoke while a pair of Jews ineffectually waggled knives at them from outside.
Maybe they ran in and just had a massive.
I lost that first game very badly.
Well, that's a learning experience.
And you got a story already, so
sure, yeah.
How to behave with smoke grenades.
Yeah, I've got a story already. It's one that the gang doesn't admit to anybody else, but
because the gang drops a smoke grenade.
Glue that smoke grenade onto a different model. Don't trust that one again.
Don't give it to Barry, shit with grenades. It's a lesson you learn once.
Barry shit with grenades, a great
or Barry shit
name.
Grenades.
Try and fit that on the cards. But yeah, that's what I've done this month. That was what I was thinking about in hobby terms.
Good luck in your campaign.
Yeah, keep us updated. I'd love to hear more stories about people.
Yeah, how you get on about it.
Whiffing shots or falling off things. Or
next podcast.
Shutting
write
doors.
Write an article about the key, the most cinematic moments, maybe.
Next podcast, I'll come back in. I won't admit that I've been doing that because I lost so badly. There were 4 people down in the first game, and I've had to quit and move away from the club.
Barry shit grenades.
Well, someone else was talking about that, I'm sure. Well, it wasn't me.
Nice, cool. Well, thanks, Tom. Rachel, what was your? What did you want to talk about? This part.
Right. So, you are soon to be executed.
Whoa.
Oh, that's a pretty intense.
And similar to when you're given your final meal, you are being allowed to paint one final model. What's it going to be? Starting with you, Dines.
So, okay, all right, I'm thinking this is either, what do I go for? Do I go for something enjoyable? Do I go for something, do I push myself? Is this the time to be doing that? Have I got enough time? How much time do I have? This is a question to the question giver.
Maybe have like a month. So you've got plenty of time. Okay, right. You've got plenty of time.
All right, plenty of time.
Not going to be.
And like, you're probably in prison, so you don't have to work
and,
or whatever.
And just any model ever?
Yeah, anything.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, see, now I'm thinking, like, is it the castle? It's probably, you know what, it's probably not the castle. I'm thinking...
The problem with the castle is that like, you're kind of done with it in about maybe 2 hours of work.
Yeah, right, and it's pretty, yeah. So a lot of the similar stuff. I'm thinking the answer is...
Highlight each brick.
Yeah, the answer is the Skull Vein Manse.
Ooh. Great choice. Great choice.
Right, because it's never coming back, but it's big. There's a lot to do. There's a lot of weird details. You can go pretty funky with colours. You can try out some weird stuff that I never got to try before. And at least when I'm summarily executed for the crime of being hoarding too much terrain, I will have at least left one cool bit behind. You could paint some wild ass colours. You could do some. Yeah, I could make this real if I simply sold a significant portion of my assets and bought one.
I can't remember what the Skull Vein Manse looks like.
Oh, it's all right. So it's the big Lemony Snickers twisty turny tower house with off to the side a rickety ass observatory.
Oh, did they
on the Skull Rock?
They resold that on a rock of Sigmar as something else, right? Like the something observatory or whatever, I think. Yeah. But only for a limited time.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, that kit is just...
A Skull Vein Manse or the... it's like War...
Smith. War Scryer Citadel.
Yes!
War Scryer Citadel.
There's got to be like imagine what else you don't have in your brain, in your memory.
This is exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, please don't talk about that. I feel quite super sensitive about that. I have a lot of Warhammer, causing me a lot of issues. But that's my answer. Okay. That's my answer. It's the Skull Vein Manse. And if it wasn't, I tell you what, if this happens after the period in my life where I have obtained one, then the answer then would be the Witch Fate Tor.
Mm. Okay.
That's old school.
Is,
I like that.
Yeah, which is an old school, big, circular, essentially a D&D model because it has freaking floors and stairs and layers in it of like a 3-story witch house. Yeah. Quite big as well.
It was incredibly elaborate for a time when Warhammer Fantasy had building walls that were essentially just you're in it or you're not.
Yeah, trying to rank up square-based minis like in that terrain. Ugh.
Exactly. It's not possible. You just go around it. But in AOS, everything is possible. Warcry, love it.
Okay. Good choice. Who wants to go next?
Do I get to assemble the model as well?
Sure.
Can I pick a kit and assemble it? Because I'm very fond of the Vanguard veterans.
Oh, that's a lovely kit.
They're Space Marines, which is boring, but they're very nice Space Marines. You can go pretty fancy with them. There's lots of stuff to do with them and they come out quite nice, and then the actual painting would be a bit of a doddle because I know how to paint Space Marines.
Are they the ones with the jetpacks?
Yes, so they are the fancy assault marines with stuff like relic swords and hammers and axes.
It's just basically every single piece of war gear available to Space Marines, right? Is in that box.
Yeah it's that and the Stern Guard box together are like two of my favourite kits. Awesome. I'm very much hoping for something because my current army is mostly Primaris. Very much hoping for something equally fancy and elaborate for the Primaris range before too long. Maybe that's what the Sword Brothers like that.
The Sword Brethren are a little bit like that. They have a lot of bits and poses.
Yeah, and the other Black Templars guys, the normal ones.
So you've got Crusader Squad, and then you've got Sword Brethren. That's the one.
Yeah, yeah. Like maybe I should get some of those to scratch my itch.
Yeah,
they're nice. Yeah.
So
making some Primaris Vanguard vets is like next on my list for Tomekeepers for exactly that reason because it's such a nice kit.
Yeah.
and I want customization.
Yeah. Nice.
Even in the face of execution, you're unrepentant.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why they're taking you.
And why am I being executed? Well, I was asked what my favourite model of all time was, and I said a Space Marine.
Rich, what about you?
Hey, they're a good Space Marine.
I don't know. I think it might have to be Archaon, Grand Marshal of the Apocalypse, on his horse, and his horse's two mates. I know if I ever get one, I absolutely won't have the patience. I'll spend time on it, make it nice, but I like to paint fast, and I won't have the patience to do it proper justice and edge by light everything.
But if there isn't a next model, right?
If there isn't a next model, and that's my magnum opus, then...
And the threat of impending death is enough to make you spend that time.
Yeah, maybe. There's no... You're not painting for an event. I mean, you're not painting for a competition. You're just... Here's a model. Create some art. And you've got... I mean, it's like... it's like choosing an all-you-can-eat buffet as your last meal, right? Like, as long as you can keep eating, you're not getting executed. So, maybe this is a bit dark for a hobby podcast.
There's an alternative to this, right? Which is, why is... How is this materially different from your desert island model?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought, actually.
That was the other idea I had for this, which is what your desert island models, because theoretically with the desert island model you could keep painting it over and over again, right?
Yeah, the your desert island discs are what if you could only do these ones, whereas this is what if you could only do one
and that's the last one.
Yeah. My desert island kit would definitely be Vanguard Veterans, because you can just keep doing them over and over again.
I think even my desert island models would be Vanguard Veterans or Stoneguard Veterans. I just tools make some really cool ass poses and some sick ass looking space marines.
But it's got to be something you can base in sand
and palm leaves. Palm leaf cakes.
How long do you reckon Citadel paint pots keep on a desert island?
In 40-degree sun.
Listeners, if you know, let us know if you're based in Mauritius.
I did see a thing on Facebook about somebody who was flying over the Arctic Circle with his modelling stuff and was saying, "Will Citadel paint survive freezing and being unfrozen in my bag?"
Sure.
I took my paints to my whole paint collection to Korea, and that went in the hold, and that gets pretty chilly, right? So that's not, I think, it's standard baggage.
Sure, but you didn't fly over the Arctic Circle to get there, did you?
Yes.
It's pretty cold. It's pretty cold in the sky.
Actually, hang on. Yeah. Yeah. Now I'm like,
they're not like loose. They weren't like globe in my mind. They weren't dangling around out the back of the aeroplane, but they were in the hold.
I don't know. Well, maybe.
I'm not sure.
I don't know. Maybe. Just dangling off the back of the plane like that sort of newly went car.
Yeah, exactly. Plastic rattling.
Is it materially colder?
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe all the comments I didn't see on the Facebook were, "What are you talking about?"
I think past a certain altitude, it's just cold.
Yeah, is it materially colder 40,000 feet above the Arctic Circle than it is 40,000 feet above Mauritius?
Like, either way, you're still readers, a stone throw you know, again, space.
Don't email us. I don't actually care.
Listeners, if you know the answers to these questions, that's fine. Good for you.
Please,
I actually do. So it's something like 2 degrees colder every, I want to say 1,000 feet. That can't be that. Yeah. I'm going to say that.
How cold does luggage get on a plane?
Hello.
Frantically Googling.
Great, this website has answered that with kinda cold.
Brilliant.
We fucking knew that. Thanks, Google.
I love empirical data.
Generally speaking, a 767 Boeing flight maintains its baggage hold above 7 degrees.
That's fine then. Because that's like the temperature of my flat on most days in the winter. Yeah. So
that's only 1 degree warmer than my bathroom last week, so...
I kind of assumed it might be, like, the external temperature, which often on flights reads, like, minus 15 or something, so...
Yeah, this website is saying minus 44.
That's quite cold.
I don't believe that. I think things would
okay,
break.
But I bet if you're in like a small plane that doesn't do that, like if you were flying out to the end of Svalbard or whatever, I wonder if they just let your luggage get cold.
Yeah, I reckon. You gotta fly the plane in mittens.
Yeah, probably.
Anyway,
Rach, what about you? What's your end of life model? You were thinking about this. You brought this topic, so you must have something in mind, surely.
All I can think of is Alariel, the Everqueen, because I've always thought that's a super cool model, and I do want to paint it someday. And if I was going to be executed, I probably wouldn't have painted it yet, so I would have to do that. Also, hopefully, you've like maybe I'd do such a good paint job that they pardon me and I'd be not killed.
That's totally reasonable.
Yeah.
If it's crimes for doing too good painting, then I think that's a bad.
Oh gosh.
Out.
Well, it depends on the crime.
And what about your desert Svalbard?
Models. A model that I could paint over and over again. I actually know the answer to this. It's Night Goblins. Because I have painted that model over and over again, hundreds of times.
13,000 Night Goblin netters.
Yep. Crash land on a desert island with nothing but some paints and the entire contents of all of the Battle for Skull passes they didn't sell.
Yeah, just like buried in the ice, like a sort of like alien crashed ship. But instead, it's just
you come across the container with all of the cities.
Yeah, looming out of the ice with a sort of like rumbling bassy soundtrack as the sun sets behind it. Whatever, like, yeah. Good. Okay. Well, I think we've sorted that out. We've now solved flight transport of models.
God, we're good.
Rich. What were you thinking to bring to this discussions?
So, I guess I have a topic to talk about. I don't have a point, an end point. I guess I just want to stimulate some discussion. I own a lot of Warhammer, and a lot of armies, and a lot of paints, and assorted hobby things, like tufts, and glue, and tools, and books, and gaming aids and tokens, and the list goes on. I have to move house soon. And I guess there's a couple of things I wanted out of this conversation. First of which is, has anyone else had to move house with a Warhammer collection, and how did you find that experience, and do you have any tips, and please help me, oh no. And then I thought also it's kind of exciting because it's an opportunity to sort of start from scratch and set up a hobby desk and set up model storage and possibly actually have things out on display a bit more than I do currently, and that's quite exciting. So also maybe shake you down for some thoughts on that side of things as well. But sticking with the first bit, has anyone had to move?
Yeah, I think I have just less stuff by volume than you do. So it may have been different for me. I mean, no offense meant.
No, it's fair.
So I have kind of always... Because I've moved house several times recently in the past few years, right? Like, I went to university and lived in different university houses and travelled home every summer, and then lived in a couple of different places before getting a steady job and staying where I was for a bit. So, how many boxes does all of this fit into? Because it's all got to be in boxes, is kind of always something on my mind a bit with what I've got. I don't have more than a very few models out on display, So I remember there was a lot of packing stuff into cardboard boxes wrapped in bubble wrap and then writing on the outside what it was and then carrying it very carefully. The very first things I moved into my current place were my Warhammer boxes, just because they were so big they had to like go somewhere so things would fit in around them.
Sort of need to know the magnitude of the problem you're dealing with before you start arranging your furniture. I guess an advantage for me is a huge amount of my stuff is magnetized into really useful boxes. So I don't have to suddenly find foam for everything or like carefully wrap every single thing up in bubble wrap to move it. So that aspect of things is nice. But I do find myself thinking that also works really well for me at the moment because most of my armies live on a shelf above my head, above my desk, in their stacks of boxes. And in new place, I might like to have some display cabinets or something. So maybe actually, in about 2 months' time, I will own 15 more really useful boxes than I need to own. So there is a bit of a question of, like, with the remaining stuff, do I commit to getting everything magnetized into boxes, or do I...
Yes. I think you should.
I'd say no.
I'd say yes. Like, so my whole, like, everything I've ever painted is magnetized and lives in a really useful box, because that is the most efficient way to store painted models. It just is...
yeah. I think that encourages you to hide them in a really useful box instead of buying loads of Kallax glass front inserts.
But I haven't really had the option yet of like setting up a display cabinet, so you know.
Yeah, and I am conscious that I am still moving into like rented property, although it's going to be the first time in over 10 years that I've lived by myself, and sort of have some level of autonomy over decor and whether the money gets spent on something important like glass cabinets for models or something that's a waste of time like a microwave or a fridge. I am conscious that I might have to move again, and indeed will have to move again at some point. So.
I'm actually in the opposite position, as in I'm anticipating moving in sometime in the summer, and differences for me, I'm moving from living on my own to living with another person, so we'll have to share opinions about how much Warhammer should be on display.
Yeah, it's always an interesting one. I'm fortunate at the moment my housemate is also into Warhammer, so we do have some shelves downstairs with armies on. But
would you say you've got an awful lot of stuff, Rich? Would you consider getting rid of some of it? Would you downsize?
I've mulled it over. I have downsized quite a lot. I mean, I always have an ebb and flow of projects in and out, and indeed have had mini breakdowns, not to make light of that on the podcast before, about do I have too much. I think the barring maybe like a few things that I just think aren't ever going to go anywhere, I'm at a place now where I have more completely finished projects that I'm quite proud of and want to keep, and I'm like excited at the idea of maybe being able to put it in a cabinet for people to look at some point. And less kind of like half done or unstarted things that I'm just kind of going like, oh, I don't want it. I feel like I have more of a roadmap this year for of what I'm going to paint and where it gets me. And so when I look at the things I have, I'm going like, well, that big Necron army that I finished last year, like, do I need 240k armies? No, but you know, I can't really see myself getting rid of that.
If you've only got one, the other one will get lonely, right?
Exactly.
You have to keep them in pairs. I think in Switzerland it's illegal to keep a single 40k army.
Yeah, I mean, I've got like five or six Age of Sigmar armies, but you know, like, I love that game, and I think there's a really nice to follow like trend of my painting improving across those armies, and a lot of them are fully done. So there are things I could part with, but that's nothing I actually really want to part with anymore. So instead, I'm looking askance at the cabinet that has
variety of Star Wars Lego in it and going, oh, maybe we don't need to own Lego as well.
Lego, that's the unfavored child.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain stuff that will definitely come to the new house, but yeah, I just get at accumulating tat in all aspects of my life, and it's been quite therapeutic trying to just put as much of it like in the bin or in recycling or on eBay as possible before I move, because anything that I don't have to move is like one less bit of effort for me, and also like money for a new cabinet or just the costs of moving house. So
I empathise with that a lot, because we're looking to move house in the next sort of, I don't know how long a moving house takes, but say in the next 6 months, and I have similar thoughts of getting rid of stuff.
Yeah.
Just like whatever I get rid of now, I've been viewing it the last year, just throughout the house, I'll find something and I'm like, why is this buried at the bottom of like a cabinet? It's not come out for 5 years.
Why does this exist?
Don't need it. I'm going to get rid of it. Otherwise, I have to move it to the new place, and I can't be asked.
I finally recycled about 80% of my USB cable collection. All bundled up in a drawer, and instead got all that stuff and put it in like a little tackle box kind of thing. I was like, so if I open that, I've got like a couple of spare chargers, a couple of spare cables, and like...
Yeah. You don't need more than that. You don't need 18 USB A to B cables.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you threw all those printers away. You don't need their cables.
A couple of years ago, I finally got rid of my like big bag of cables. Took it to the recycling place, and then like a few months later, I was like, "Oh, where's my this cable that I need for this extremely specific thing?" Oh no.
This is the thing. Yeah. I know that'll happen, but I'm reasonably comfortable that I'm at the point in my life now that when that happens, it won't be like when I was a student and going out and spending £15 on a printer cable is like a huge imposition. But yeah, like you've got to balance it with like not wanting to like massively contribute to the throwaway society as well. Like, I don't want to just throw away stuff that I might need in a year, but I have been known to say before, like, I kind of wish I could just put absolutely everything I own on a fire and then start again and have like three nice outfits rather than a wardrobe full of clothes that I'm like, oh, but I do like that shirt and I wear it sometimes, like, and you know, you can extrapolate.
I think it's quite therapeutic when you, if you want to get rid of this stuff, you can like, you can constructively deconstruct it. Like, I swear, when I got rid of a bunch of computery bits recently, I was like, I'm going to sit here for an evening and strip back all the cables. I'm going to deconstruct this hard drive, for example. Didn't just go in electronics. The electronics went in the electronics bin. The rest of the case and the bits of metal went in the metal recycling.
That's a good idea.
As did, to keep it on topic, a few bits of metal Warhammer that I have no idea what they were, and they were in a horrible, like, chopped in half. Oh. Like, you know,
this
like
hurts my heart,
model.
But that
yeah, but like, what do you, you know, like, it's sad, but like, again, I probably didn't do it. It probably came in like an eBay lot that I bought, and it's like a, you know, a chopped in half orc leg, metal like orc leg or something. Like, this goes in the metal recycling,
yeah,
and that's at least something, right? It's not getting literally binned.
Yeah.
Well, it probably is, but like, I don't feel like it's getting literally binned.
It's somebody else who's binning it.
Yeah, I mean, somebody else can bin it. But I'm, you know, doing my part. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I empathize with you. It's a difficult thing. Storage would be, on the notion of storage, I think displaying things is really nice. I think Kallax, glass fronted, too low. I'll just motion above my shoulder again. Great radio content, but
it's definitely
really nice.
It's definitely going to be IKEA, whether it's Kallax's or the. Or the Detolf glass cabinets, or a Billy bookcase with some glass doors.
Yeah, I had to give away my Detolf. It's a very particular aesthetic that it brings with it, and my wife absolutely hated it. She's like, you can have like fill the Kallax full of like glass fronted cabinets, but that metal thing is a monster. So, like, the glass cabinet thing, she just loathed it. And I, in retrospect, I didn't love it.
Yeah, it's
It's a bit...
But it is, it is great at displaying models. It really is, because it's just a piece of glass. Right?
Bit like living in a museum, though, isn't it? Having those tower... Or in Warhammer World, having those, like, metal glass towers just with rows of stuff.
You think they'd let you do a camp out in the museum?
Oh, my God. Incredible.
That'd be good. Just with that, not getting to sleep, because all you can hear is the music from that Cygnus Prime display.
Well, the bloody air conditioning is like minus 18 degrees. Oh. That's how we know all the models will be fine in the flights of the Antarctic.
Yeah, because it's so cold.
Warhammer World Aircon has stress tested them all.
How about the sort of second half of my question then? Like, has anyone ever had cause or opportunity to like design a hobby station from scratch, like a hobby area from scratch? Like, I don't know about anyone else, but mine has very much been like, oh, I start and I get a little tray thing with space for the 16 paints I own, and then that rapidly escalates and you're just sort of always catching up with yourself.
Yeah, very ad hoc.
Do you want it to be a dual use space?
It depends on the property I end up in as to whether it has to be just a hobby desk, or like a hobby and my computer desk, or a hobby and my computer and my workspace desk. I'm hoping it has to fulfill two at most, but we'll see.
I feel like that changes it somewhat.
Yeah.
Because if you if I were to design something like that, I'd like it to be sort of fold awayable, or like quite, you know, if depends what, again, depends what you want as a space, right? Like, personally, I have a cluttered desk, like, 90% of the time, and I hate currently. It. But if you don't mind that, then maybe it's okay. But otherwise, I'd be building in storage and Crest as well, to get those things away and in and out quickly, so that you can change, so that half your hobby time isn't spent setting up the hobby time, right?
Yeah. I mean, I assume I mind it, because it weighs on my mind, but also my desk is always messy, so clearly I can live with
it. Yeah, it's the same.
Yeah, I guess I like the one most important criteria for looking for a new place is that I have two rooms, so that I have a bedroom and another room, and whether, you know, size is going to dictate whether that is like a room that I can fit one desk in, or a room that I can fit two desks in, or, you know, whether there's also a space in a living room to put a separate sort of workspace, maybe. So I don't know the actual logistics of it. I have this beautiful dream in my mind of like absorbing into the general costs of moving, buying like, I think it's hobbyzone.pl, make like really nice stackable like modular drawers and paint racks, and like, you know, you could build in a kitchen roll holder, or, you know, tall drawers for your pots of Vallejo earth paste or whatever.
Do they take the sort of like stadium stacking approach?
Yeah, and this is the problem I have with them is that, you know, you can buy nice corner pieces and then stadium pieces, but there's, you can buy drawers which would be the right height for Citadel pots as well, but if you want all your paints like accessible, I think, like, I own effectively, like, most of the Citadel range, bar some of the texture paints and, like, the air paints and stuff. But I own, I think, every contrast paint and, like, a lot of the others. So probably getting on for, like, 200 pots of paint. And because they take that stadium approach and they, like, each... I guess it's, like... a foot.
You need like the vertical and horizontal space for each paint.
Yeah, like each foot wide little row holds like 30. And I mathed it out, and I was like, if I want to store all the paint I own, like only in this stuff, I need like a 2.5 meter long desk.
Could you
that then curls at the corner as well.
Could you not have it going like the hallway around you?
Yeah, so like that is an option.
Like a sort of 360 degree station that, like, you have to remember, like, crouch down to get into.
Do you remember Captain Scarlet? And then like Captain White would like sit in the middle of like a rotational desk.
Yeah, I was thinking about the elephant keyboard man from Star Wars with his 360 degree keyboard. But yes, I guess maybe I could do that. But
yeah, what about, why didn't they do something? So like, there should be more vertical storage with like slots for individual paints, and you paint the lid to see what color it is, and then you sort of like stack them, go tall, like they do with houses, right? Go tall rather than wide.
Yeah. So they do exist, and I've got like a vertical set of drawers at the moment, which is good because like each drawer is in a space that's deep enough that you can kind of see what's in there, and it holds like 25 paints in each drawer, so it's way more space efficient. But I like the thing that the Hobby Zone does of like also being able to have the drawers there for like all your tools and all your paintbrushes, and like literally everything could be there, because I'm currently in a, like, you know, the paints live here, and then the airbrush stuff lives in a cupboard up here, and then all my basing stuff lives in a cupboard over there, and I would just
tools are quite 2D though. You could have one of those like almost like pegboard things, like you have in a workshop for your tools.
I feel like
sort of reachable height,
some kind of act together amalgamation of what I have plus home constructed storage for other things is probably where it ends up.
The problem with like, that's like the next frontier for me when it comes to like making my hobby space better, is like using the vertical space, because like we've been renting this place for the whole time we've been here, but like soon we will own it, and I'm going to start putting things in the walls and stuff like that, so I could totally have like a little like hooks and stuff to put tools on. That's exciting to think about. My mind is buzzing with possibilities.
Yeah, this is the thing. I don't know what the rules are going to be like about mounting stuff to walls or but there's options to do like backboards that are mounted to desks and all these kind of things. So
lots of space to get creative.
How about you, Tom? What's your if you've been moving a lot and you said you're moving again soon, do you have like a reasonably permanent hobby space, or are you
so my hobby space is, I've got two toolboxes full of paints just rattling around loose like Lego, and various like cardboard boxes of bits and tufts and such like. My main hobby space is, I've got a tea tray basically, and that is big enough to store like the squad you're working on and the paints used for that, which means that it's nice and easy to like pack up.
Nice.
So the paints go back in the toolbox, the tea tray with the half assembled models goes on top of the toolbox, that all goes in a cupboard, and it's nice and easy to pack up or get out all as one unit, so to speak, which is convenient for me because I'm in a fairly small flat and have like a desk slash workspace slash dinner table.
The classic combo.
There you go.
Well, I don't know if we've reached an answer for you there, Rich.
Well, yeah, you haven't told me exactly what to do, so
I'm sorry, we've failed you.
No, I'll report back on how it goes. Put
everything you own, go through everything you own one by one and roll d6 on
scatter on what it dies.
More up, it deals d3 mortal bin wounds to yourself.
God, it's a good way of causing emotional damage as the useless Nightborn army that I have some emotional love for, but you know, it's awful.
I am talking like on a like model by model, paint by paint basis.
Yeah, when Techless rolls a one, I'm going to be irretrievably emotionally damaged. So
just the trash or treasure table.
Fellow pod contributor Pete Fienya has foolishly, in my opinion, volunteered to help me move when it comes to the Warhammer stuff, which I think I'm going to take him up on, because you know, like having to explain to your dad that yes, you can afford to own this many toys as a 31-year-old man, and also yes, please, when I say please be careful with them, I do actually mean it.
Who else is going to appreciate
Pete, I can rely
you need
on
to individually wrap like 18,000 individual night haunt in tiny slips of bubble wrap.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but Pete,
Yeah, I think Pete might be getting the call on that when I know where I'm going. It's very nice of him to volunteer. So
that's very nice. Good luck. See,
how about you, Dines? Did you have a thing you wanted, like a problem you wanted us to solve, or a question you wanted to ask us?
No, merely trying to work out a cool segue. There's none. So I'll just dive in. Basically, I mentioned it earlier. There's some few things that are getting me excited for the new year.
Sorry. I was going to say, can I suggest, speaking of excess...
Yeah, oh, yeah, no, that's good. Yeah, speaking of excess and falls from grace, I'm going to... that's a bit harsh, I didn't mean that. I'm going to... wait, I didn't mean that.
Yeah. it's not that, that hot with wow. You flat.
So I guess I'll rein that back in. There are some things which get me excited, speaking of excess, and they are... Elder... They begin with L and they end with older.
Hold on. Basically, that's not how it works.
You know what? Like, I haven't been into 40k for a while. I had some Chaos Space Marines when I first got back into the hobby, and I mean, I still have them. And I occasionally paint mentors at a glacial pace, as I've mentioned before. But my first love when I first got into Hams was Eldar, and I just can't quit them. Like, when I see this,
I just
new
can't quit
Marines.
You, Ulthuan.
You thought you were out, but they've pulled you back in.
Yeah.
One more job.
I just can't quit you, Ulthuan. Actually, my first models were Biltan, but Ulthuan is my jam. Eldrad. I just can't quit Eldrad, I think is what it's coming back to. I bought a while ago, I bought like a few, when they did that sort of like, quite limited made to order run of Eldar heroes a couple of years ago, I bought some of the cool gang there, like the Spirit Seer and the Bone Singer and like a few of the Farseers, and I painted up a few of them and it was quite enjoyable. And now I'm seeing these sneaky rangers on bikes. It's fucking radical. And these new guardians, well, I know guardians are an Ulthuan thing. Oh, well, Storm Guardians are, anyway.
Yeah, they call them, what do they call them, like Black Guardians or something?
Yeah, the Black Guardians, yeah. So, they're pretty sweet. I like that concept. I like the old sort of, the many, many years old sort of Seer Council jam, where you just have a whole bunch of Warlocks and Farseers wreaking psychic rage. Just being cool, cool, pointy-eared, radical people. being sad. I just really like these new models. I wasn't that mad about the about Jayn Zarr and the Banshees, but I was never a big fan of Banshees, to be honest. But you know, new Rangers, those new Rangers on bikes are really cool.
It's a bit different, aren't they?
I just really like that look. And I like pretty much all bits of the Eldar range anyway. And I've always liked Aspect Warriors, and they're not really Ulthuan. I don't think that's Ulthuan's jam, although I'm sure they have them. But I'm every time I see these like teasers and other bits, I'm just thinking, what would they look like in Ulthuan, which is the super dark colours and stuff like that. And I just, man, I'm getting really inspired. And I think I might be back into 40k based on Eldar. Mm. And I haven't played 40k for quite a few years. I'm a bit intimidated and put off of it. By the intimidation. But new Tau is also really exciting me, but I'm more excited by new Eldar. And I think I might be bought in. I think I might be... Oh, I might be due to fall for them.
See what you've done there.
Yeah, there we are.
Oh, dear.
I'm falling for the Eldar.
Nice.
That's where I'm at. Let's not go into them, but there are other bits of information. There's some leaks around the Eldar, and it's spicy stuff. It's getting me really quite... keen. I'm really, really excited to see where it goes.
I think I have managed to like completely insulate myself from the post like what we've seen now leaks. Mm. So
yeah, that's nice.
I'm excited just to see what comes next, and I'll be happy. Yeah, I've got an Eldar army, so it's not even starting a new project to buy them. So yeah.
they've previewed, like, you know, we've had some, like, silhouettes of things, a particularly scythy, bony-looking boy and that sort of stuff. Like, that's in a spinny silhouette preview video and stuff.
New Year
that's
video.
Just really cool. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
So that's just all some really cool, exciting stuff to come. Has anybody else caught the Eldar bug?
I'm excited about Eldar too. I don't think I'll go in on them because I've got too much other things to do. If you think you're intimidated by 40k, I can assure you I'm much more.
But unless you love 40k, right, famously.
Yeah, for Rachel to get into 40k, she's going to undo like 5 years' work developing a personal brand. Hating 40k.
There's two ways of developing a personality on the internet, and one of them is to be enthusiastic about something, and the other
pick precisely one thing to be very contrarian about.
But yeah, like, because Eldar were some of the first models I had when I was early teen kind of thing, but I lost basically all of them. Speaking of relatives destroying unintentionally or otherwise your models, RIP to
my
Farseer and my unit of guardians and a few other bits and pieces that are sadly recycled.
Oh. Rest in stone.
It was a dark day.
Rest in stones. Oh, poor Eldar. What did you paint them?
I was like 11, so I had not painted them.
I actually have one. I have one single guardian left from that era, which was one of the old static A pose holding his metallic shuriken.
Classic.
Catapult in front of him. Yeah, stoic, just standing there. I went through a phase actually a few years, like maybe, oh my god, I say a few years, it's 10 years ago, where I was like, wow, I really love the Eldar Rogue Trader models, and I bought a lot of them. Like, because they had names and stuff, and they were all in funny poses. So back when they had like tiger stripes and stuff like that, and I was going to do a thing with it, and then they just sat in a drawer, and then I sort
I sometimes look at
it. But now I'm back on buying. Warlocks. I got some ASMR. It might not come through on our recording, but it'll be there.
Literal handful of warlocks. Recording.
I got a whole fist. I got a fist full of warlocks, and I ain't afraid to use them. But they're really cool. I really like all the old like metal warlocks and farces. And I'm going to do all that because that's big on the old Seer Council thing. So I'm just going to build that. I don't know what the rules say about this stuff. I am only. Hope that the Ulthway armies can just take infinity warlocks.
Just build whatever looks cool.
That's true. It would be nice, like, but I had the same problem with my Seraphim where I have like six skink priests, and in reality, I have to try and remember to cycle through them when I play.
They're all so cool.
Otherwise, they'd never see the table.
Yeah, I have.
Okay, jealous.
I have two of the same plane for my Eldar army because I painted one and a friend painted one for me for like a gift exchange, and the one he's done. Has a lot more care put into it and is amazing. He's done an amazing job matching my colour scheme and just painting it way nicer than I did. So consequently, the one I have painted literally never sees the table.
Yeah.
But, you know, there you go.
Well, that's something I'm going to end up with like 18, well, that's an exaggeration, but probably like six farces all with identical loadouts.
Yeah, I mean... There you go.
But maybe that's fine.
That sounds like an opportunity to have, like, if one of them dies, then they don't come back, and you have to use the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe a nice crusade. Maybe if I'm going to get back into 40k, there could be a nice crusade, like a crusade thing where I could do that with my farces, cycle them in and out.
If he gets wounded, just paint the next one with, like, I don't know, a wound.
Yeah,
blood seeping through your robes.
Yeah, except they're all metal, so they're sort of like go up and down in height as I do that. They sort of get shorter as they get older, but
Have you got all the different eras of?
Yeah, I think I've got all of the eras, because when they did that made to order run, there was an actual full the proper pointy guy, right, with his big eyes.
Very jealous.
And then there's like a mid tier where like the ones just after that where they just had swords.
Yeah.
And then there's the old guy like just holding his spear out in front of him. I think that model's really silly, but he has a big helmet.
The Eldar range
big
is
winged helmet.
I think part of what fuels my kind of like middle hammer obsession, that like late 90s to early noughties selection of metals.
Yeah, well, some of the Aspect Warriors went through some really weird times, right, where they had like really short runs of like the Striking Scorpions.
Yeah,
and
so
Fire
there's
Dragons,
three different types of Striking Scorpions.
Yeah,
but one of them was like only available for like a year. It's really weird.
It's like a really rare mid-range. Yeah.
And then like Swooping Hawks, there's like two, but technically there's three, because for a while the new ones came with the old wings or something. I can't remember exactly. Probably getting it wrong, but
I'm really psyched for if there's gonna be new Aspect Warriors. I don't know if there's gonna be new Warp Spiders. I generally don't know that, but I would go crazy for those. I've always loved the Warp Spiders.
I like the new Autark kit they just showed off. One of the options for that is like a Warp Spider backpack, right, and a Warp Spider gun. Yeah, exactly. So
that's what's
I
giving
love
me hope.
How many options that kit has. Like, I wish every hero kit was like, here have a bunch of different heads and
weapon options.
And
yeah.
It's modular with the existing kit as well, right?
That's
I said
cool.
So. That's two quite different poses that you can probably then, you know, if you have some of the outstretched arms from the dynamic old one onto the more static pose of the new one, then.
One of the models I picked up to strip back was a metal Autark, and I think he has the missile launcher in his right hand, and I think the new one has it in the left hand, and I'm wondering if you can just double them up. Probably not, but it
would be cool.
But like he's holding two stilts. But new. I think if they were new Warp Spiders, I would paint them like Black Widows, right? Because then they're like the black of Ulfway, but then the cool red of Warp Spiders in a spooky pattern.
That's a cool idea.
It could be fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
If I can only hope.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Yeah. So I'm just got that big hope. I'm latching onto every rumor. And snippet of news that comes out about all the watch the space. No. I'm sure it will go nowhere.
My friend become addicted to Aspect Warriors.
Yeah, well, famously, it's a problem, right? It's a problem. Then you become an Exarch, and then you have to, leave.
Or
and have
you become
a sad time.
A young king. And
yeah, that's true.
Well, then it's an exciting employment opportunity.
Isn't it you get to fully realise the meaning of burnout?
Yes.
You're so dedicated to your work that you literally set on fire and grow to 12 feet tall or whatever. And
I feel like
die.
I've been there.
98% of the way
recently.
There.
It's been a tough year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
Cool.
Neat. Okay. Well, I think we've taken all the takes.
The well is dry.
The well is dry. It's time to fly this wave serpent back to the craft world.
Nice.
What a twist.
Nice.
You did it.
You did it. Where can we find everybody? Tom, where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter at LeSwordfish. That's L-E Swordfish, or one word.
Nice. Rach, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Nershly, NERSHLY.
Nice, Rich.
You can find me on Hateful Hellsite Twitter as well, at Rich Nutter. Or you can find me on Instagram at RJ Nutter, I think. But I don't use Instagram very much. Follow me on Twitter. That's the place.
Go to TweetSpace. Yeah. Look up Rich, look up everybody. You can find me at TN Dines on in all good social medias. That's not true at all, but you can have a search, see what you find. You can find Tiny Plastic People, the rest of these podcasts and excellent articles at tinyplasticpeople.com. Check that out. There's a great new post about even more cultists, which has just gone up. And it's well worth the read.
Yeah.
Some incredible stuff there. If you've got any questions, comments, feedback, it's thetinyplasticpeople@gmail.com. But aside from that, I think we're done. I think we've taken the takes.
Find us at tinyplasticpals on Twitter and Instagram as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, come on. Well. Come on, we need the engagement, Tom.
Sorry, I was driving up the numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Engage, follow, like, subscribe.
Review. Review the podcast if you like it, because that would actually be really useful. So,
yeah.
Leave us a review.
Tick the bell thing to get notifications. I don't know. It's just what the YouTubers say.
If you don't like it, don't leave a review, though. Important.
If you haven't got anything nice to say, don't say anything at all, except do feed it back to us if you want to hear. All right.
Anyway.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right.
Catch you on the space. I don't know what I'm saying.
Bye.
See you on the craft world.
Goodbye.